Welcome to the May 3rd, 2011 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Would you please rise and join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk, could you kindly read the changes to the agenda today?
Certainly. Items on your core agenda are added items on consent is A16, a request to approve an agreement with Cambria Community Services District to provide interim fire chief officer coverage to the Cambria Fire Department. It shows 5th District, but it's actually the 2nd District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Withdrawn items under consent are items A8 and A9. The Federal Aviation Administration informed airport staff that additional information is needed for the 2 grant requests. Staff is requesting items A8 and A9 be withdrawn to allow staff time to work with the Federal Aviation Administration to assure that all necessary information is submitted prior to your board's approval. You have an added item on closed session under pending litigation. Existing litigation number 12, San Luis Obispo County, or San Luis Obispo Coastkeeper versus County of San Luis Obispo, 13, County of San Luis Obispo versus Pacific Bell Telephone Company, 14, Oak Terrace Mobile Home Park, LLC versus the County. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. And those are your changes for today.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Just before we get into consent, I want to remind people our new, hopefully will work, way of getting slips from you if you intend to speak is to leave them in our little basket over there on the stair railing so that our clerk is not distracted or anyone else is not distracted in the midst of our discussion, so we'd appreciate that. We have many good and interesting presentations to get into, but before we do that, let's get into consent and open it to public comment. And I have a few requests on consent. The first one is from Michael Kidd on A3. And the next one is Marta Peluso on A5. Morning, Mr. Kidd.
Good morning. My name is Michael Kidd. I'm a Avila Beach resident and a Avila Beach hotel owner. What I'm asking today is that the board postpone the appointment of the Avila Beach Local Designation Committee for the 1% being returned. We sent early last week a letter to County Council where we addressed what we believe is substantial conflict of interest problems with the CIBD board and with the use of their funds. We believe that those funds have been abused greatly, and the people that we're alleging the conflict of interest are the ones that you would approve today. So unfortunately, our letter got bounced around between the county grand jury that we are also appearing before on this issue, and then it was sent back to county council. So I respectfully ask that you postpone this for a week until County Council has had a chance to review our letter of complaint regarding the conflict of interest, and then we go from there. As a citizen and a substantial taxpayer, we want our county funds to be used on the best way possible, and we certainly don't want to get in litigation with the county regarding this issue, so we want to pursue every avenue we can to avoid that. We will be asking that the principal complaint is shifting of $200,000 to $250,000 of funds from the CIBD board, which by your resolution, Section 5, is that the money is supposed to be used for the district. They have chosen to use it for whatever project they choose to do so. We believe that's in direct violation of both the highway law that you used to enact the bid and also your own resolution. So we're asking County Council to review those expenditures, and then if we're correct, then perhaps that we can have some changes in policy. The board, we respect. You've been very busy on budget items, but we think you've been negligent in your fiduciary responsibility of overseeing this fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kidd.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Peluso? Oh, there you are.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Marta Peluso. I'm the executive director of Arts Obispo. And coming up in 2012, the San Luis Obispo County Arts Council will have been the local partner with the county and the California Arts Council for 30 years. I want to personally take this opportunity to thank you for all of your support of Arts Obispo and of me personally, because at the end of this month, I am stepping down as executive director. I also have someone here with me. The Board of Directors of Arts Obispo is in the process of doing a search for executive director, and they have appointed an interim executive director that I wanted to introduce you to so that you would know this face and this person when she comes to speak in front of you. And her name is Barbara Radovich, a longtime member of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Radovich, did you want to say anything?
No, I'm just, other than I'm happy to meet you all and look forward to working with you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Marta. You've done a terrific job in your tenure at Arts Obispo, so we'll miss you in that role, but we'll see you in others.
I will be back.
Yes. Okay, I think that is all on consent from the public, so I will close it to the public and bring it back to my colleagues at the board. Mr. Teixeira, any items to comment on?
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I would like to pull item A6 for individual consideration, as I will not be voted on it because of a perceived conflict of interest.
Okay. Mr. Meacham?
None, sir.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, sir. No.
Okay. And how about you, Mr. Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'm going to A3, since Mr. Kidd brought it up, and he's a hotelier in my district, and wanted to check with County Council if they've had a chance to review Mr. Kidd's letter and go from there.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Warren Jensen, County Council. I personally have not seen that letter. It may be that someone else in my office has. If so, they haven't brought it to my attention.
Okay.
So perhaps we could consider that later after a break, and I'll find out.
You want to pull that?
Yeah.
Okay. So with my colleague's consent, do you want to pull A3 off the agenda for separate consideration, yes or no?
Trail it until later.
Trail it till later?
Okay.
Okay. We'll do that. And have a chance for County Council to check with anyone on his staff if they reviewed Mr. Kidd's letter. So we'll trail that later. And Mr. Teixeira, A6, you want to pull that and recuse yourself on that? Okay. So we've got that.
If
no comment, I'm assuming. Okay.
If your board would like, I can just note that he's abstaining
right
on that.
Just note that he is
without
abstaining
pulling
on that. Okay. So with that, let's have a motion.
Chairman, I move that we approve the consent calendar with the recommendation to trail item A3.
Second.
Okay.
And as amended on the core agenda?
Yes. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Gibson. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. We will move into the presentations, which we have many presentations, and we'll let those staff members who need to get back to.
I'll move approval of our presentation agenda.
I'll second.
Thank you. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, Madam Clerk, on presentation calendar.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay. B1 has Military Appreciation Month. I know that our Veteran Services Officer, Mr. Burns, is here, and I think I see some of our fine veterans as well, and Mr. Meacham, who is the veteran on our board, will be happy to read this resolution. I don't know who would like to come up to the lectern and receive it. Do we have some, Mr. Burns, do you know if there's someone designated or? Okay. If you would come on up, and Mr. Meacham will read the proclamation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my honor and privilege to read the resolution proclaiming May 2011 as Military Appreciation Month in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the people of our community have great appreciation and admiration for the many local men and women who serve their country in the armed forces to protect and preserve the freedoms enjoyed by our community and by all Americans, and veterans possess a wide variety of valuable job qualifications and skills, including experience, maturity, leadership, and loyalty that make them ideal candidates for employment. And whereas veteran workforce specialists, veteran employment support specialists, and other employment development department staff are committed to ensuring that veterans receive the services and programs to which they are entitled and to promoting employer interest in hiring veterans. Therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 2011 as Military Appreciation Month in San Luis Obispo County and urge all local employers, organized labor, veteran organizations, and other government leaders to support this worthy campaign to increase employment opportunities for the men and women who have faithfully served our nation in the military.
Picture? I don't know. Get a picture with the board? Okay. We'll let you do that too.
It's all inclusive of the
board. Yeah.
One price fits all.
Okay. Now feel free to make a comment, sir.
I'd just like to say that each year, the County of San Luis Obispo has graciously put this proclamation forward, and I accept it on behalf of all of our veteran community, all of which I'm very proud of. I'm very proud of this community. I'm also very, very proud to be a citizen in San Luis Obispo County. I think it has a great heart. It does tremendous help. It gives tremendous help and does a lot of services for the community here. I don't know of any other community that is as magnanimous as our county is. And I've been in a lot of communities, served 20 years in the Space and Missile Program, and for the last 19 years I've been the state veteran representative for employment development here in this area. So I can attest that our veteran community has received a great deal of assistance through this this particular county. And this document will be placed at the Business and Career One Center, which is on Industrial Way. It'll be put in a glass housing for all the veterans that are coming to the One Stop looking for work and assistance, so that they can look at it and read it and know that our community cares about them and appreciates their service and all of the problems that they have encountered in behalf of our freedom. So with that, again, I'm accepting it for the community, the veteran community, and I humbly appreciate all of this, all of the continuous support that this county has given. It makes me very proud of each one of you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Oh, Paul, I'm sorry. Did you want to add to that, please?
Yes, I'd like to. Thank you very much, Board of Supervisors, Mr. Grant, my boss, Robert Cohn, my analyst, for the Veterans Service Office here in San Luis Obispo. our office sees a lot of veterans, a lot of family members, a lot of dependents, a lot of widows and widowers. And if I could just ask briefly, anyone in the audience here that is a military member, veteran, or has a family member that's a veteran, could you please stand? Thank you. Just along with recognizing workforce development, MILFATS and EDD, Ted Azuna and John Guerra, who also work down there and help veterans with jobs. This is with Military Appreciation Month. We'd also like to recognize all military members, family members, and dependents. Locally, we have active duty Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine recruiters. We have a Coast Guard base. We also have Camp San Luis Obispo, and then just across the border in Monterey up in San Miguel is Camp Roberts. There's several thousand active duty, reserve, and National Guard members that serve our community proudly and honorably, along with the 23,000 veterans and their family members that live in San Luis Obispo County. The folks that were just standing here stood for our freedoms that we have today, that we've had in the past, and that we will have in the future. And I appreciate what you've all done for your country and your service. And that's not only the military member, that's the family at home. Current events in the news have shown the dedication of our military men and women around the globe. 10 years ago in September, I was still in the Navy. I was putting on my uniform on my way to the rifle range at Point Magoo, down in, off south of Port Hueneme. When I heard the news about the tower, that plane had flown into the tower, I didn't think too much of it, thought it was an accident. Shortly after that, when the second plane hit, I knew there was going to be a problem that day at work. Going to the base, on our way to the base, Port Hueneme, going to the range, we were locked down in the base. We couldn't check out our weapons. We couldn't go to the range that day. You all know what happened and what unfolded. At that time, I had 16 years in the service. Many of you were in the service during then. Immediately, my thought was for my family. It was also for the troops I was with and then my career. I was concerned for my family and the troops, and knowing that I would most likely be put in harm's way. Luckily, that never happened, as the unit I was in did not, about 10% of our unit got deployed. The reason I say this is because we have men and women in this community that are getting ready to deploy, or that are on deployment, or you have cousins or aunts or uncles, nieces and nephews that are on deployment overseas right now, and many of you are stepping in to help that family. And this is part of Military Appreciation Month because the entire family is in the military when there's a military member. And I'd like to quickly applaud any of you here that are military members, and I'd like everyone else to applaud the family members one more time. Today we recognize all that serve, and we're happy with that. Our office, the Veterans Service Office, I'd like to specifically thank John Fitzpatrick. If you could stand up, please, sir. Many of you know John. John's been a county employee for over 30 years. He's been with the Veterans Office for over 20 years. Many of you he's helped. Your family members he's helped. John, I appreciate working with you. I appreciate you training me to do my job. For those of you that served in the military, John is the chief training the ensign right now. So we have a great community. Kim McCord, also in our office, has helped thousands and thousands of veterans in this community with benefits and other things through the VA and through the state. But we do not do that alone. There are dozens of organizations in the county, and briefly, if I say your name, if you could just stand, or your organization. We have VFW members. If you belong to any of these groups, please stand. American Legions, Auxiliary Legion Groups, which is the women of the American Legion, Leatherneck Society, the Marine Corps League, anyone that's here from the Atascadero Memorial Foundation or the Purple Heart Trail, Central Coast Veterans Memorial Museum, the VA Medical Clinic, the Vet Center, Military Officers of World Wars, Employment Development Department, Operation Welcome Home. Anyone here from the state of California, CDVA, or CalVet, AmpSurf, Estrella Warbirds Museum, San Luis Obispo Submarine Group, and the Veterans Express and Ride On. There are many other groups in the county that help veterans. It's workforce development, our office, but many of you are boots on the ground. You're the troops out in the community. So I'd like to thank you all for what you do. Two groups I'd like to split. You folks can grab a seat. I'll be done here in a minute. Two groups specifically I'd like to mention. Veterans Day is coming up in November. There is a quilting guild group out of Cambria that has hand-quilted 20 quilts that they wish to donate to disabled veterans or wounded warriors. So I will be passing out information in the next few weeks on how to contact that group. We're also looking for a venue to award those quilts to our veterans. If anyone would like to have those awarded at an event they will be at, please let me know. The second group I'd like to thank is the American Legion Post 66, which is in San Luis Obispo, right near the Veterans Building. Every year they donate about $10,000 in grants to students throughout the community, and that those grants are primarily funded through a pancake breakfast, which will be held next month. There's flyers and notices been sent around, so if you could support that group, that would be outstanding. Lastly, Senator Blakeslee and Assemblyman Asajian, our former board member, will be recognizing veterans for their specific jobs, tasks, their contributions to this community. Senator Blakeslee has picked a recipient, and Assemblyman Asajian, his group is still working on that, his office. So I'd like to thank you all for that. I'd like all of us to remember the sacrifice that our military has served and that our veterans have served. Freedom is not free. America is at war. However, most of America is at the mall. Okay, that's kind of a joke. Our military service members are at war, and they're fighting for us, fighting for the things that we enjoy every day. So thank you very much for the time. If time permits, we'd like a few folks just to say a few words, a couple minutes each, if that's all right.
How many were you talking?
Just a couple.
Okay.
Three or four.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. And Milt, if you'd like to speak, if you'd come up towards the front, and then you can say.
I'm also a commander of the DAV, which my very good friend Paul left out, but that's okay. We're friends. The reason I mention that is because our community has just lost a great, great hero. My personal friend, Al Starkey, died late Sunday afternoon. That man had 6 Purple Hearts. He was in World War II, Vietnam and Korea, and in Korea he was taken shortly as a prisoner of war, and was primary in the escape of about 100 individuals. They were getting ready to load onto the containment trains. Had that occurred, those people would have been lost totally, because they would have been executed. All of them escaped. He helped them all escape, and they all were available to talk about it. He was a member of this community, and he he was my personal friend. And I'd like to just have a moment of silence for a great hero. He was called in his early 70s, he was reactivated because he was the only Army nurse that they could find that knew how to set up a MASH unit, which is what he commanded. And so in his early 70s, he was back in uniform showing the Army how to set up the MASH units that they had in Cosmoline. So the man never stopped. He had 4 shunts in his heart. And he has a daughter that we're going to try and help restart her life. Amen.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hi, my name is Greg Shear, and some of you know me as kind of the founder of the Veterans Express, the transportation service for veterans that keeps going up and up and up, from starting from 10 a month to we're 120 to 150 a month. But that's not why I'm here. I wanted to share a story. About 3 or 4 months ago, we had 26 young men and women recently deployed to Afghanistan. And I went to the airport and sent them off. And I gave them and all their family one of our wristbands. Supervisor Mitchum, I see you got yours on. Thank you. And shortly after that, I got an email from Afghanistan from one of the individuals there. And he indicated to me that it would be so uplifting for his troops and the people in his unit if there's any way possible I could get some Taco Works nachos sent to Afghanistan. And I had no idea what Taco Works nachos is, so I did my research. I found where they were located in San Luis Obispo and talked to the president, and he gave me a name of a guy to call, and he gave me a lady to call, and her name is Kathy Baker. And Kathy Baker works up in Paso Robles, and Kathy Baker lost her son on April 4th, 2004. And I got to meet Kathy, and I met the people in her office, and what the entire office did in support of Kathy and her grieving is they formed a group, and what they do is they send out 30 care packages a month to any troops there are, and they've sent out over 9,000 care packages to our troops. And they do a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I just wanted people to be aware of Avatar Systems in Paso Robles. And the lady's name is Kathy Baker. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Next, please, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Marty McGrath, and I'm a member of the Marine Corps League Detachment 1340 from the Central Coast, the Coastal Valleys. I'm up here because of Paul Burns, and to compliment him on the operation of his collaborative efforts. The first time I attended his meetings about 2 months ago, there were about 40 different groups represented in that room who provide services to our veterans, and most of them are from this community. A few were from down in the Santa Maria area, Central Coast area, but I made connections with any number of organizations. Calvin Angel is the state coordinator of these programs. We have one started, second meeting down in Santa Maria, but it's absolutely marvelous, and I would certainly hate to think that in this time of constrained resources there would be any reduction in support for Paul Burns' collaborative efforts. Our purpose in being here today is to become a slightly more visible presence as another Marine Corps League detachment on the Central Coast. But more than anything else, in listening to someone speak this morning, they talked about how generous the Central Coast has been. One of the inquiries that the Marine Corps Toys for Tots program has received in the past year was from Marine Corps League headquarters. How in the name of heavens do you all raise so much money for Toys for Tots? Apparently, this region leads the nation in cash donations as well as toy donations. That was something that I really, really felt good about sharing. Let's see. I think that's about it. We would ask your support if it's possible. We are beginning to raise funds to support the Purple Heart Highway effort, the signage that's going up and down Highway 101, remembering the Purple Hearts. And if you see any events being advertised, such as our barbecue on July the 23rd at the Santa Maria Aero Museum, which grants access to the museum as well as a fine Santa Maria barbecue dinner on July the 23rd, come join us. Thank you for having the time for us this morning.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, Supervisors, County Administrator, Council. My name is Dana Cummings. I'm the Executive Director for AmpSurf. We're a small nonprofit based out of Pismo Beach, and our main mission and goal is to rehabilitate disabled veterans and local people with disabilities through the healing power of the ocean and surfing. And we've had the fortunate opportunity to work with so many great American heroes coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, all the way to guys who have served in World War II. Our range spans from we've had them as young as 6 coming out there, and we've actually had World War II vets as old as 88 and blind come out there and surf with us. And it's just an honor for us every time we get to take someone out and show them, you know, we love and take for granted every day here on the Central Coast. And, you know, every year we fly these guys in from all over the country to do the events and, like I said, enjoy what we all get to see every day of our lives. And I'm just honored to be able to be associated with some of these other fine organizations. I'm a member of the local Marine Corps League, American Legion, Disabled American Veterans. I lost my leg in 2003. And obviously a tragic thing, but it's been one of the biggest blessings of my life, being able to do all the things I've been able to do and be able to be a part of these organizations and work with people like Paul and the others. And I just want to thank you guys for recognizing all of us, our organizations. And I've got a short video clip that they're going to show so you guys can see what we do down at the beach, because it's kind of hard to bring the beach to you. So hopefully they can cue that up. It's about 30 seconds long. There it is. But there's no sound. Can you guys even see that?
Soldiers haven't stormed beaches with this intensity since 1944. Support AmpSurf, rehabilitating amputee veterans through surfing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Board of Supervisors, thank you very much for this opportunity to share some of these things that go on within our community. I'm Bob Prophet, Commandant, Marine Corps League 680, right here in San Luis Obispo. I feel like a conduit. We sort of integrate all of these things that you've already heard about, so I won't belabor you with all of the things that I have listed here, because there are so many people who have already addressed these things that happen in our community. Detachment 680 has a long history of community participation. Our community and outreach are ongoing, and we have very large number of upcoming projects. The Los Osos Valley Memorial Cemetery is one of them, with our flagpole out there that we put up over 10 years ago honoring the lost veterans. And again, for over 10 years, we've had a large presence for Toys for Tots. You'll hear about that in a few more minutes, and you've already heard something about it. Last year, over 50,000 toys were distributed to underprivileged children in this community. 50,000. That's a lot. We actually come up rank in the national, on the national scale, number 3 in the nation. That's saying something for a community our size. Cuesta College Veteran Group, providing scholarships for our veterans. Todd Fredericks, I don't see him here this morning, but there's a guy there that works at the college out of the president's office, and he is very, very much involved with 680 and the distribution of funds for the veterans there. You're going to hear more about the Marine Corps League involvement with Leatherneck Honor Guard. The gentleman coming up behind me will share that, because he's the officer in charge of that. Support our troops from Arbiter. You've already heard that. 9,000 packages sent out. Kathy Baker lost her son, Michael, in combat, and she has just given her life over to doing these kinds of things. And we need to salute Arbiter Company for postage for 9,000 packages that have gone over to our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. We proudly serve many organizations and are committed to honor, service, and integrity, and we thank you very much for that. Again, I want to just add to the county, we want to thank you for providing a wonderful place where we meet on a monthly basis at the Veterans Memorial. We thank you again for that.
Thank you.
I'm here representing the Central Coast Leatherneck Honor Guard. I am Jim Hawkins, Major, U.S. Marine Corps Reserve, retired. Our primary mission is to provide military honors for all veterans during funerals or memorial services. We also participate in public patriotic events to instill pride of uniform, service, flag, and country. We are a California 501c3 organization made up of former honorably discharged service personnel, mostly Marines. We have performed over 800 military honor ceremonies since July 1999. Our brief program consists of a rifle salute, three volleys, playing of taps, folding the flag, and flag presentation. In fact, our group did two on Friday, do memorial services, and one on Sunday. Our group began with when the government could not provide the service, and even now, they only provide minimum honors to veterans that did not retire from the military. We are available through local mortuaries, Arroyo Grande to San Miguel, the Veterans Administration, and on our website, which is leatherneckhonorguard.org. Telephone number 400-5340. My telephone number is 226-8503 for more information. I also have brochures and business cards for anyone interested in planning ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
As I say, the first sergeant's always behind. I'm Jim Pickens, first sergeant, United States Marine Corps, retired. I'm here on behalf of American Legion, Post 66. I am the commander this year. I also belong to the DAV. I have my own program, which is a veterans organization also, called Veterans Helping Veterans in Need. We're also a 501c organization. We're helping the families and the men and women coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq adjust back in society by getting what they need. What we can do is immediate help. And I thank you for your dedication day for the veterans. I thank the Board of Supervisors for passing this proclamation day. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. There are three people I forgot to mention, specifically Kelly Hayes, who's new to our office. She's our admin assistant, helps in the front desk. Also, Transitions Mental Health. They are starting to work with veterans where they otherwise could not receive services and treatment or benefits from the VA, and then also the Independent Resource Living Center, which helps veterans with adaptability and housing issues that are disabled. Thank you for this time. I appreciate it. Frank, thank you for your service.
A quick comment, if I could.
Okay. Mr. Meacham would like to.
And if I could, and I'm going to just, I'll wrap it up real quickly, if I could. There's a couple of other points I wanted to make. One in particular is there's another organization in Paso Robles, and this young lady has done an incredible job of called Supplies for Soldiers and sends packages over to our troops on a monthly basis as well. And I got an email this morning from Marcus Brotherton. He's the author of several books on the Band of Brothers. There's another book just came out on Shifty Powers. I don't know if any of you know who he was, but he was one of the Band of Brothers, had the opportunity to spend 3 days with Shifty, an incredible individual. So there's another book out in that regard. Thank you for your service. I can't say enough for what you do for our country. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. I think the board is unanimous in our gratitude for veterans and current service members and families and those who continue to help our service members. So thank you very much for being here. Appreciate that. Okay, we are moving on to our next resolution, which is Wildfire Awareness Week. Before Mr. Lewin takes the microphone, I wanted to use this opportunity to congratulate him on behalf of my board here. As many of you know, Acting Chief Lewin is now officially Unit Chief Lewin. He's been appointed by CAL FIRE to be our unit chief here in our county. Most of us, I think, have had a good amount of experience working with Rob. He's been he's come up through the ranks. And he has done, in his capacity as acting chief, he has done a terrific job to be more available in the community, to work with other departments in the county. I personally am very glad that he has been named our chief. He is an excellent fire professional, and we congratulate you.
Thank you, Chairman and Board. And as your fire chief, I'd like to make my first recommendation is that, for the sake of time, that you do not read the long resolution
okay.
for Wildfire Awareness Week. We appreciate that the board is recognizing Wildfire Awareness Week, and that along with the governor, in recognizing that California is a state that is threatened by wildfires every year. We had our first fire in this county yesterday of 187 acres. I see I'm joined by Smokey Bear. Come on forward, Smokey. Smokey Bear, nice to see you. Smokey Bear and I want to convey a message that Smokey Bear has been conveying since 1940s, that only you can prevent forest fires. That message continues on. We have another message that we'd also like to convey to the our community, and that is to be ready for wildfire. Make sure when a wildfire is approaching that things are set, that you're prepared, you have a plan, and then when we call for an evacuation, that you go early. Ready, set, go is the message we'd also like to convey along with preventing fires. Fires are disastrous in California. They destroy people's lives every year. And the way to combat them is to prevent them from ever occurring. But when they do occur, to be ready for them.
Well, Chief, perhaps I can come down at least to present the resolution to you and our favorite celebrity, Smokey.
That'd be wonderful.
It's interesting.
Smokey, hang in there, buddy.
It's interesting. This guy's about the same height as our sheriff. He didn't get Parkinson's to do this as a team building
where
kind
is
of
he
thing.
In?
Yeah, where is he in? I don't see
him. Seen him this morning.
Credit for not making it.
Okay. Let's move. Move a little more central.
There's a picture of your legislative assistant, Mr. Chairman, smoking too, so I want you to know that.
He's really absolutely
there we go.
Yes,
thank you. Smokey, always a pleasure.
Carry on. It's hard to wipe that smile off now.
All right. Focus, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I know. I have to focus now on the next resolution.
Mr. Chair?
No.
We had one. We had one public comment that we wanted to have.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Ms. Wilkerson wanted to make a public comment on this item. If you would, this is the time to come up, please.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa Wilkerson. Board of Supervisors, staff and guests, thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my appreciation to the brave men and women at CAL FIRE and present them with this book. About 4 years ago, I lost my brother in a fire. I was on the other side of the flames, but could not reach him. I'm here today to share my story with all of you about how the wonderful firefighters at CAL FIRE helped my family and I get through the impossible. The firefighters at Cal Fire are heroes and angels. They risk their lives every day for us. They risk their lives for my family and I. They not only protected us physically, but emotionally. When Cal Fire arrived on the scene, I was walking a dangerous line trying to help my brother. They knew exactly how to help me in that situation and gave me a shield of protection. They took my hand and guided me away from the flames and ashes. They showed compassion and led me to safety. The shield of protection they gave me is the difference between having hope or being permanently scarred for life. They spent hours talking and consoling my family and I while the other members of the team were fighting the fire. That shield of protection is with me right now and will always be a part of me. My brother's memory is preserved and protected. I can keep his memory alive and celebrate his life because a group of brave and compassionate firefighters stepped in and risked their lives. The shield of protection with their wonderful examples gave me hope and the strength to work through the pain and be there for my family. Cal Fire's heroes also inspired this book, a book filled with wonders of our coast. Without them, this book would not have been possible. I found, in the darkest moments of tragedy, a miracle of light shining through the smoke and ashes. And that miracle of light was the heroes and angels from Cal Fire. The last time I saw these amazing heroes was under very unfortunate circumstances. I'm here today to give them light and let them know how grateful we all are for what they gave for us. They made a difference in our lives and helped us get through the impossible. My family and I are closer than we've ever been. Cal Fire gave us a second chance. This book is a small token, really, but it comes directly from my heart, and it's for all of you, and was created with the hope you gave me. I've carried that hope through the years and will never let it go. It gives me great pleasure to dedicate the Big Orange Day book to the brave heroes and angels at Cal Fire. Thank you for caring.
Thank you, ma'am. Sure. Thank you, Mrs. Wilkerson. Appreciate that. Okay. We're going to move on to the next proclamation. Supervisor Teixeira is going to read our Older Americans Month. And if who is here to accept on Mark Schaefer here, I see, from right on.
I guess I could accept.
There's no donuts to go with it, Supervisor Meacham. Resolution proclaiming San Luis Obispo County Older Americans Month. The following resolution is hereby offered in red. Whereas in San Luis Obispo County, approximately 15% of the population is over the age of 65, a higher percentage than the majority of the California counties, and this population grew by 38% between 2000 and 2010, and nearly 6% or older citizens live in poverty. And whereas economic challenges facing the nation and state have resulted in budget cuts and have created hardships for older citizens who have need assistance to remain safe and independent in their homes or need advocacy and monitoring in long-term care facilities. And whereas in San Luis Obispo County, our older residents generously contribute continuity, knowledge, and experience, especially as volunteers in our community, and SLO County would like to encourage younger persons to better prepare themselves to become healthier older persons, and whereas the ASPC and other local agencies and groups serving seniors and adults with disabilities are commended for their efforts to improve the lives of older Americans. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the unique needs and many contributions of this population and proclaims May 2011 as San Luis Obispo County Older Americans Month, and so honors and values our older Americans and the professionals, family members, and citizens who care for them, improve their lives, and help pave the way for future generations.
Give them the reso, Paul. Do we have a... I don't think we have something. So we'll let you say some words. And
paparazzi's gone.
He doesn't look too old, though.
Chairman Hill, supervisors, I'm here as co-chair of the Adult Services Policy Council to thank you very much for this proclamation for Older American Month for May of 2011. Our council is very involved with providing various services for seniors, and I think an important part of this proclamation is the incredible value that older Americans bring to our communities in helping us raise our children, to giving us knowledge and participating in our community in a very valuable way. We all know we're going through very tough economic times, and so some of the services are being underfunded. And I think it's a time as a community that we all need to step up and help our older Americans, our seniors, whether they're the neighbor next door, help folks out because we really are losing some of the resources to do that. And one of the new programs, the Good Neighbor Program, that's being operated by Wilshire Foundation is called the Good Neighbor Program, and it's a really good opportunity for people in the community to give some time to help out a senior in their home. There's even a volunteer driver program that helps get seniors around, and so I encourage all of us to get involved, volunteer, and let's support our older Americans. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. One more proclamation, and that is from Supervisor Patterson. And is Marla Lipshin and
Marla is here, and
Gila Zach,
others, so.
I guess, want to come up to the lectern, and Supervisor Patterson will read the proclamation.
They're actually.
Would the group's going to come up?
Several
the
members, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I'm pleased to be able to read this resolution proclaiming May 2011 as Lyme Disease Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County. Whereas Lyme disease is an infectious illness caused by a spiral-shaped, spirochetal bacteria transmitted by infected ticks. And whereas Lyme disease can be cured if caught quickly and treated appropriately with antibiotics, based on a known tick bite or initial symptoms such as rash, flu-like symptoms, fever, muscle aches, headache, fatigue, or sudden numbness. And whereas Lyme disease is a nationally notifiable disease and over 38,000 cases were reported to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in 2009, making Lyme disease the most frequently reported vector-borne disease in the United States. Additionally, the CDC estimates that 90% of Lyme disease cases are not reported, suggesting a total of approximately 380,000 cases in the year 2009 alone. And whereas everyone needs to be aware of this spreading problem, learn how to protect ourselves and our pets, recognize the symptoms of Lyme disease, and understand how to effectively test and treat these diseases. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 2011 as Lyme Disease Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo County. Thank you, Mark.
Come in and
come on in. And if you'd like to
say
something,
words.
Please feel free.
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. Thank you, members of the board. Good morning. My name is Marla Lipshin, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the 70-plus members of the San Luis Obispo Lyme Support Group, about one half of whom believe they were infected in San Luis Obispo County or nearby. In fact, interviews with two local doctors who treat Lyme disease revealed that in the past year, these two doctors alone have clinically diagnosed over 100 people in our county with Lyme disease. Lyme disease is on the increase in San Luis Obispo County, and yet the public and most medical professionals remain unaware of this insidious disease and proper prevention methods, diagnosis, and treatment. Amongst our members, the average time from onset of symptoms until diagnosis was over 7 years, resulting in late-stage Lyme disease, a painful and debilitating condition which can mimic fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, MS, ALS, mental health disorders, and other diseases. I was infected on a backpacking trip 30 years ago and have been disabled with severe back pain and other mysterious ailments my entire adult life. I was misdiagnosed and mistreated, including two unnecessary back surgeries, until my Lyme diagnosis 3 years ago. Unfortunately, my story is not uncommon. Many of the members of our group are too sick to attend today. We encourage the public to protect themselves from ticks by tucking long pants into socks and applying tick repellent to clothing. Perform regular tick checks and remove attached ticks by pulling out directly with tweezers. If you're bitten by a tick, contact California Lyme Disease Association at lymedisease.org for more information about testing and early treatment options. Protect your pets with regular applications of flea and tick treatments. In the past year, I personally know of people who were bitten by infected ticks at San Luis Mountain, Santa Margarita Lake, Lopez Lake, and rural Atascadero. Because these people knew somebody with Lyme disease, they were guided to receive prompt and appropriate treatment and are doing well today. Our goal is to educate the public and medical community so that all of our citizens receive this information and treatment and do not suffer the devastating effects of this disease. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Cindy Orr, and I'd like to thank Marla for all her hard work on putting together the proclamation. If you can see me, congratulations. That's more than the doctors or insurance company can see. I consider myself a fairly resourceful person, but it took over a dozen doctors and 2 years before I got a tentative diagnosis. If you are looking for the equity in my home, you have no further to look than my right arm, where I have had many IV antibiotics administered. Luckily, at least that brought me out of the wheelchair, so I'm very grateful for that. This disease is financially devastating. It destroys lives and families. And I'd like to thank the members of the council for this opportunity to help spread the word. The Lyme disease does exist in California. Thank you.
I have a few comments from board members, Supervisor Patterson and Supervisor Meacham.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank all of you for coming down this morning and doing what your mission is. Did you want to make a comment? Go ahead. We do need a speaker slip.
I think she did turn.
I did turn one in. I'm Sheila Zack. I just want to make a brief statement on just to say thank you again to Marla, to all the work she's done, and also to the board supervisors for recognizing this. We are a family. We live in Los Osos. The only place that our daughter had ever received tick bites was in Montaña de Oro or up in the area back behind Sunnyside School there or in Big Sur. And we were very fortunate in that her diagnosis came early. Unfortunately, the pediatrician that we took her to here in San Luis, who is one of the considered preeminent pediatricians, told me that all the testing that had been done was in vain because there is no Lyme disease west of the Rockies. And so it was only through serendipitous circumstances that we found a Lyme-literate doctor for something totally different who decided to review all of the tests. And she is now Lyme-free. She's been off medication for a year. But I just really want to reiterate another thank you to the fact that we're getting this message out, because it's very important. I didn't know, and now I do, and I've let everyone else know that I can, but I think it's really important to make this a countywide issue because it can be very devastating. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to, again, thank you for bringing this to our attention and helping educate residents of San Luis Obispo County. It is essential that people know about the disease, that if they are bitten by a tick, that they get early treatment, because, as I understand it, the disease can be cured with early treatment, and that's the key. So thank you for your efforts. We appreciate you helping get the message out.
Mr. Mitchum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've never had so many proclamations that seem to deal directly with me personally. I'm a veteran. My dad was a fire chief. I'm a senior. And my daughter was affected with Lyme. And I can tell you that it is a very devastating thing to see someone go through. And it will mask 250 other diseases to trying to find their way down to exactly what that diagnosis is. She's doing very well. She's very active, and she's been blessed to be recovering from this quite well. But I understand that it is a much more, a larger problem out there than I think we had anticipated. So thank you for coming out and making everyone aware of this.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. Our last presentation is Employee Service Awards, 20-Year Service Awards. I see Ms. Duke coming to kick things off. So, Ms. Duke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Dory Duke, and here with me today is Robin Mason from the Human Resources Department. We are happy to be here today to assist the board in your tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. Individuals recognized by the board are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. Today we are presenting awards for 20 years of service. When I call the employee's name, come down to the left podium and Robin will provide you with your award. After you receive that, you can approach the board from this point forward for a congratulatory handshake and remain standing in front of the board, and after everyone receives their award, we'll take a group photo. So our first employee receiving an award today is Rosemary McFarland from Mental Health. Rosemary started as a Library Technician 1 and is currently an Administrative Assistant 3. Rosemary, are you here today? Nope, we're missing Rosemary.
Okay.
We'll save her award for her. Mary Gabriel from Mental Health. Mary started as an Intermediate Typist Clerk and is currently a Senior Medical Records Technician. Our next recipient is Kenneth Kliss from Parks. Ken started as a Park Ranger 2 and is currently a supervising Park Ranger. Next, we have Cheryl Kleiman from the Planning Department. Cheryl started as a construction permit tech and is currently a building plans examiner, too. Congratulations. And next, we have Carmen Laredo from Public Health. Carmen, are you here today? Okay. A couple of absentees. Ramona Najera? Ramona from Public Health? Okay. Dana Olivares from Public Health, or Public Works, I'm sorry. Dana started as a Public Works Worker 1 and is currently a Public Works Worker 4. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
And our final recipient, John Perry Is John with us? Great. John started as a Public Works Worker 1 and is currently a Public Works Worker 3. Congratulations. If you'd all move forward in front of the board, we can take a group photo. These are all of our 20-year award recipients.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you for your service.
Keep up the good work. One more? No? Okay. She's got it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Duke.
Thank you.
That will conclude our presentations, and we have public comments to get into. A couple of things before we get in. First, we're going to start with...
Hey, Paul, how you doing, man?
All right. Use your inside voice.
Every voice.
Rowdy bunch of employees. Two beginnings of public comment. First, I want to, some of you may have noticed this beautiful display that was put out in our lobby not long ago, this lovely bell that is a gift from our neighbors in Mexico. And our former colleague, Kacho Asajian, was instrumental in making this happen, this donation. So I want to call up Jeanette Pell and Mark Carella to speak to this, and as you know, we're just 2 days away from a very important holiday, Cinco de Mayo. For some of you, it only means margaritas, but for the great people of Mexico, of course, it means one of the great victories over the French. So, Ms. Pell?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Jeanette Pell, the General Services Agency Director. I'm pleased to be here today to bring to your attention a new display in the Government Center lobby. This display contains a bell and flag of Mexico that was gifted to the county by the Mexican consulate of Oxnard. This gift was presented to the county in appreciation of Mexican Independence Day, which is celebrated on September 16th. I would like to thank the following staff from Facility Services responsible for constructing this very attractive display. My thanks go to John Blankenship, Lee Hall, Mike Jeffis, Preston Resner, and Mike Wall. I would now like to introduce Mark Carella, representing the Latino Outreach Council. He will provide the history and significance of the Mexican bell and flag.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. In 2007, the Latino Outreach Council realized it was important to educate the local community on some of the different dates of significance in the Hispanic heritage, one being September 16th and the other being the 5th of May, Cinco de Mayo, which are often interchanged to be related to independence. So thank you for the great explanation, Mr. Hill. September 16th is the true Independence Day, and so we elected to, under the cooperation of the County Board of Supervisors and the Downtown Association, participate in the closest Thursday farmers market to September 16th. The Mexican consulate heard of our efforts there and saw the pictures, the great crowds that come with the market, but also migrated their way towards the mariachis and the folkloric dancers, and they became a part of our presentation 2 years later and helped us understand and replicate the event that takes place in Mexico City on September 16th on an annual basis. So during the last 2 years, and last year being the most significant since it celebrated 200 years of independence, the consulate was actually with us and part of the presentation, again, that replicated what actually takes place annually in Mexico City. It's a very significant event, one of the most celebrated. And I just appreciate the community that recognizes the various cultures that exist and the various culturally significant events that take place in our community, St. Patrick's Day, Chinese New Year, and now Independence Day celebration for Mexico. We look forward to many years of this. We're very proud to have the prime real estate of the county building. And just want to let you know that the Latino Outreach Council and the many Latinos that live in this community greatly appreciate the support that allows this all to happen in this great community of San Luis Obispo. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Krillin. And we are very honored and proud to have the bell in our lobby. And speaking from experience, if you've ever been in Mexico during one of the holidays, it's just a unique and wonderful experience, and I highly recommend it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, I want to go to Jim Becker, who is with us from PG&E. And if Mr. Becker, about 6 minutes would do, you think?
Yes, sure. I think it'd be fine.
Okay, so we'll... He is making his way, it looks like. Thank you, Mr. Becker.
Yes, thank you. So I was in front of the board several weeks ago, and I gave you some information about the situation at Fukushima in Japan and actions we were taking at Diablo Canyon. And so I'm here today to update that. And I will start by saying that we went through a process, as did all nuclear plants, a one-month process to revalidate our level of readiness and preparations for if we were to have what we call a beyond design basis event at the plant, whether that be earthquake, tsunami, flooding, fire, etc. We went through a multi-week process, as did all nuclear plants, to revalidate our readiness for that. We have completed that. We completed that a couple of weeks ago. We filed our report to the rest of the U.S. nuclear industry, so that effort is now complete. I will tell you that we did validate that we had the capability to meet all of those functions that we were investigating as part of that effort. We did identify areas to improve. For instance, we identified where some procedures could be more clear. Another example would be where we've done security upgrades at the plant over the years. That would have slowed down our ability to, you know, run some of these compensatory measures. So we're going to take actions to make that more efficient going forward. These are the kinds of things that we identified. They're in our corrective action program, and we will take action on them. So now a new effort is rolling out across the whole U.S. nuclear industry. And this is a 90-day effort, and it is focused more on our storage of spent fuel. More specifically around the spent fuel pools themselves, we'll be looking at our ability to monitor the pools, the water in there, the temperatures, et cetera, our contingency planning for dealing with problems if they were to arise and how we would respond to that. Again, we do have procedures for dealing with problems. We do have equipment pre-staged for dealing with problems, but we're going to go back. In addition to revalidating, we're going to look for ways that we could be better prepared and improvements we could make. Every U.S. nuclear plant is doing that, and that will occur over the next 90 days. As far as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission goes, they completed an inspection at Diablo Canyon a little over a week ago. They did that inspection at every U.S. nuclear plant. It was more of a fact-finding inspection, covering a lot of the same ground that I just described. And they will be, by this summer, we anticipate, they will be taking all of that input and deciding on initial changes they may want to make to regulations or their own rules. I know that the chairman of the NRC, Mr. Yatsko, was speaking at a public event yesterday, and he spoke about spent fuel storage and that the NRC was looking at their present requirements around spent fuel storage, and should they change those at all. So I think we can expect something in that area from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission going out a few months. Last thing I'll say at the plant, we have put together a team to deal with, you know, this issue, further validations we need to do, changing in NRC requirements, et cetera. But just to help manage this issue and give us a real focus on that, we have put together a team at the plant to do that going forward. So that team is now in place. Also, when I spoke to you a few weeks ago, I talked to you about our outreach efforts. I mentioned an open house that we were going to hold at the South County Regional Center. We did hold that, and I think it went well. We had a good turnout. Well over 100 people came out. We had booths set up for people to come in and ask questions. I gave a couple of overall presentations to the folks that were there. A lot of our employees participated. We're very appreciative of that. And I think it was a good effort. We're going to continue that. We're going to do more outreach efforts in we haven't set the date yet, but I would anticipate in about a month we'll do another version of that open house approach. We'll probably move it to another location. We want to be going to different locations in the county to make sure that, you know, everybody has a chance to come out, be informed, and ask questions. So that is going to continue. And, you know, I think that's what I had for an update for you today. I will pledge to you that, I'm willing and able to come in and give you further updates as we go forward, both with our efforts at the plant, developments across the country, and with our outreach efforts. So that concludes my comments for today.
Mr. Becker, one other thing that I know that I think I'd spoken to perhaps Tom Jones about is having about a month back, there was some confusion over a letter that John Conway sent to the NRC, which was followed up by a letter to the Atomic Safety Licensing Board by your outside counsel. And we would like, if possible, for Mr. Conway or someone else to come in and explain to clarify any confusion that exists in our public or even in the media that often the public gets its information from. So I wondered if you would...
I'm sure we can do that.
Okay.
Yep. We'll talk with John Conway today about that, and we'll set that up.
Okay. And yeah. Mr. Grant?
Yes, thank you. Jim Grant, County Administrator. I just want to segue from this discussion into a more general emergency planning discussion. About a month ago, we did bring to your board a discussion on emergency planning, disaster planning regarding earthquakes, tsunamis, nuclear. And your board was interested in having staff come back and discuss specifics on evacuation, and that is scheduled for May 24th, your board day on May 24th, so that the Office of Emergency Services will be back, and we'll talk in detail about evacuation planning.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Becker.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to get into general public comment if we could. Many slips, and we'll see how far we can get before a break. Mr. Weissman, followed by William Miller.
Good morning, supervisors. David Weissman, and I know I have appeared before this board and in this county wearing many hats for various things. This is a hat that you will only see me wear in public once a year, and perhaps with good reason, but a good reason it is. For coming this Saturday, May 7th, it is National Train Day, fourth annual National Train Day here at the San Luis Obispo Amtrak Station. As anyone who knows the history of this county knows, a good part of the history of this county was predicated on being the halfway point on the famous railroad link between Los Angeles and San Francisco, and for many years was a major way station. It's still one of the most populous of all. The Amtrak Surfliner route is second only to the trains operating on the East Coast in terms of patronage. And we in San Luis are lucky to have three trains a day going north and south. So we can celebrate the railroads here in San Luis this coming Saturday from noon to 4 p.m. That's Saturday, May 7th, from noon to 4 at the Amtrak station down at Santa Rosa and Railroad Avenue. We're going to have... there'll be free refreshments. There will be a photography display. There will be displays from the San Luis Obispo Model Railroad Association. And as I say, there will also be a jazz trio playing out on the platform as we've had in the past. So for the past 3 years, it's typically been a fun event. We've had hundreds of people show up. There'll be souvenirs and paper engineer caps and conductor hats for the kids of all ages, as we like to say. You might have seen the news today. Amtrak has finally received funding through the state of California for new railroad cars for our Surfliner trains that we can expect to see in the next few years coming on board because the ridership is increasing. We've seen that down at the station now with the gas prices increasing. People are flocking to the trains. We see that a lot of the contingent of people we get now are just so fed up with air travel that they don't mind the extra time it takes on the train because they'd rather not have to deal with those indignities. And so if you really want to have a fine, relaxing travel experience, try Amtrak. Again, Saturday, May 7th, this coming Saturday, noon to 4 p.m. at the Amtrak station. Food, fun, and railroad activities for kids of all ages with National Train Day. The website nationally is Amtrak.com. And once again, thanks very much. Would look forward to seeing any of you down at the Amtrak station this Saturday at noon for a fun afternoon of railroad activity. Thank you.
Thank you, David. William Miller, followed by Marie Tomasini, please.
Chairman, members of the board, my name is William Miller. I reside in Garden Farms. I'm here on behalf of Santa Margarita Area Residents Together. I'm speaking today on the subject of the application for a conditional use permit for aggregate mining known as the Oster Quarry. Last week, much ado was made about a non-agenda item. The applicant rounded up all of their hired hands, consultants, attorneys, and partners who spoke on a wide variety of topics, none of which were relevant to the actual topic at hand. While we think it's great that many of them have lived here for a long time, the fact of the matter is the procedure used by the lead planner to select the environmental consultant did not follow county policy, and the process of selection was flawed in many ways. I applaud the Planning Department's Environmental Division for retracting the original selection and starting over again. I also applaud this board for supporting them in that decision. Like I teach the Boy Scouts, it's not how you make the mistake that counts, it's that you admit that a mistake was made and take positive steps to correct that mistake. I do think, however, that it is a mistake to submit the RFP to 25 environmental consultants. This ensures that many firms will not bother to submit a proposal because they have only a 1 in 25 chance of winning the bid. Instead, I recommend that a short list of 5 qualified applicants should be chosen to compete for the contract. Benchmark Resources should not be on that short list. While it is desirable to have a consultant that knows the industry, it is not advisable to have a consultant that is so blatantly beholden to the industry. Lastly, I would note that there is a big problem with the original application in that it includes an asphalt and concrete recycling component. This is prima facie not allowed under the land use ordinance unless there is a waste disposal facility on site. Time and again, we have seen the taxpayers' and applicants' money wasted processing applications that don't meet the sniff test. At the end of the road, the applicant complains that they've spent so much time and money to pursue the non-compliant use that they should be allowed a waiver, and all too often one is granted. This results in too many court cases based on faulty decisions. We are formally requesting a separate hearing to review the recycling portion of the pending application. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Ms. Tomasini, followed by David Ballantyne.
Hello, Marie Tomasini, Park Hill area, Santa Margarita. About a mile from the proposed quarry, I was given a bit of a gut shot. That word was used last week pretty effectively, according to Tell Trip. When I was told by my agent, who is starting to prepare a reverse mortgage for me, that it would depreciate the value of my property, the quarry would. So that was my response to the gut shot comment. I hope there will be a more thorough investigation of whatever firm is chosen to do the EIR so that we get an unbiased evaluation. And I thank you for your time. You'll hear more from me later, I'm sure.
Thank you, Ms. Tomasini. Mr. Ballantyne, followed by Marjorie Burkhart.
Good morning. My name is David Ballantyne, and I live in rural Santa Margarita on Park Hill Road. I want to comment on the proposed Las Palitas Quarry on Highway 58 at the Salinas River Bridge. I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors for providing an unbiased and transparent EIR process. This is a very controversial project that will change the character of our community forever. And many folks in my neck of the woods are not happy with that prospect. My property is about a half a mile downwind from the blasting site. What about our property rights? We will have to live with this decision every day for the long life of the quarry. The public's trust in this process is critical. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Burkhart, followed by Charles Kleeman.
My name is Marjorie Burkhart. I live across the street from Mr. Ballinger. And I have concerns about the volume of traffic, which have been stated here before, and about the lack of a designated staging area where diesel trucks get to sit and wait their turn. I have concerns about the safety of cyclists who use Highway 58 on a regular basis where there is no shoulder, and I suspect that the very first person to die from a traffic accident on that road will be one of those cyclists. And there's a lot of them out there on a regular basis. The Slow Bike Club had an event just last weekend. And cyclists use it regularly. I'm also concerned about groundwater quality and quantity. I am concerned about what goes into the groundwater as a function of the surfactants that they want to use to control the dust. But as a nurse, as a registered nurse for 30-some years, we won't say how many, I'm very much concerned about the downwind consequences for people with respiratory problems of dust, diesel fumes, etc. Everything that happens on that piece of property blows straight up Park Hill Road. It's like a funnel. When there was a fire behind Ostier's place some years ago, I slept out on my deck because I was worried about the flames or what have you. When I got up in the morning, my sleeping bag was 2 inches deep in ash that had blown from there. It comes straight up that valley. And anybody, particularly older people and infants, young kids, of which we have a number of both, may be tremendously compromised by those respiratory issues. And I really would like to be sure that there is a balanced and thorough EIR from a company that doesn't advertise itself in their ability to overcome entrenched opposition, read upset neighbors. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Kleeman?
I'm Charles Kleeman, rural Santa Margarita. I'd like to thank your planning staff for the efforts they've made to maintain transparency and try to create an unbiased outcome in this EIR process that's underway for the Oster Los Politos Quarry. I'd also like to thank your board for supporting their efforts to do that. This is really important. This is all we have available is this process. And I think it's unfortunate the applicants chose to use this forum to debate this. I'm not sure this is the right forum, but this is what we have available to us. I'd like to comment on just a few things that you heard last week. I've just got a few bullet points. I'll try to make them brief. Only a few individuals have any concerns. There were nearly 200 scoping comment letters. I think if you had the appropriate forum at the appropriate time where people weren't at work, you'd see quite a bit of outrage about this. That's what we're seeing in town. The public has no expertise to be a participant in the process and should only have input at specific times. It is true that CEQA mandates participation at specific junctures, but it certainly doesn't limit participating. In fact, it actively encourages it. And it's important to note also, members of the public are entitled to the same, right to hire a consultant or attorney to improve their expertise, just as an applicant does. So that point is kind of interesting. The notion also was put forth that your local status should have somehow play a role in this decision-making process, that if we've lived here for a long time, we shouldn't have to go through all this. I think it's very important to keep in mind that land use decisions should consider the suitability of the site, regardless of who makes that proposal. This is a controversial large-scale industrial project proposal, and it's within an area that has a lot of residential rural properties surrounding it. The argument that the applicant spent a lot of money already is very alarming to me, because that raises a red flag to me concerning their ability to fund the cost of proper mitigation and ongoing operations. They're going to be very expensive in the long run, in a way that's going to be able to coexist with the surrounding existing uses. So it should be obvious that exemption from this process is not an option. And I just wanted to thank everybody again for upholding that and supporting that position.
Thank you, Mr. Kleeman. Board's going to take a 15-minute break, come back, finish public comment, and then have our first hearing.
Good morning, Mr. Hill, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 35-plus-year county resident. As you may recall, on March 29th, I appeared before your board at your regular meeting and admonished Mr. Gibson that if he repeated the critical refrain about people in Los Osos, then I'd be here to remind him that he's not the smartest guy in the room. Well, last Tuesday, as he has done in the past, Mr. Gibson said, and I will quote, "I would observe, and I think it's important for the public to observe, we've heard from 8 speakers today that have been before us many, many times before. A lot of what we've heard, we've responded to many times before." Well, let me suggest a few reasons why Mr. Gibson is not the smartest guy in the room. As you know, Los Osos, and the backdrop is we're under level 3 severity under the RMS for water supply. We have a rapidly advancing, in fact, it's accelerating the rate of seawater intrusion on our primary drinking water supply. So that's the backdrop. It's my suspicion that Mr. Gibson and Pavo over beers decided originally to locate the treatment site halfway from Los Osos into San Luis Obispo on the Tonini Ranch and spray the treated effluent into the air. He also formed a meaningless technical advisory committee for political cover, of course, chaired by a guy named Bill Garfinkel, who just rolled into town and knew virtually nothing about the wastewater project. I think that's why he was selected. The project fails to address water limitations in the community and have deferred that to the water purveyors under the ISJ agreement. The project has left out all the vacant properties, and that roughly $30 million in cost has been loaded up now on the existing property owners. There was no apples-and-apples comparison of the collection system options, step versus gravity, which was promised to the community. And lastly, the community saddled with a stimulus money, a USDA high interest rate loan for over $80 million. This would be humorous if there wasn't so much money involved. This project now is more expensive than Nacimiento project, where 110,000 people pay for that. In Los Osos, there's 12,000 people. So I would say for those reasons, Mr. Gibson, you're not the smartest guy in the room. Thanks.
Ms. Taylor, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos. I'm here with others from Los Osos to the disdain of Supervisor Gibson. The transparency of the cost of the sewer project is lacking. The questions have been asked of Supervisor Gibson regarding the property for the site of the treatment plant. Has the county purchased it? This was a question at the state. Does the county have an option to purchase the property? Is there a willing seller? Are there willing buyers for the treated water in the agricultural community with acknowledged problems of recycled water from sewer plants
even with Title 22 recycled water. When are the costs of the implementations of the ISJ report going to be addressed to the Los Osos public? Has the community been made aware of the time extension for the sewer project? Major decisions are made when there are time constraints within a family's budget, as there should be in the county's decisions. When are those in the prohibition zone going to be advised that they will have to come up with additional money in the property tax amount in November and what it is going towards? Some people do not believe unless they are these questions are answered from the county, and some even question the answers. I think we need a town hall meeting where these questions are addressed. It is imperative for the public to know what is going on. We do not get this information. Thank you.
Mr. Margetson, followed by Mike Brown.
Richard Margetson, it's nice to know that Chairman Hill has now tag-teamed with Mr. Gibson to marginalize Los Osos public comment at these meetings. Mr. Gibson did it again. Same type of comment he made last Tuesday he made at the LOCAC meeting. He's got it down to T now. He made that same comment at the State Water Board, which really wasn't a good day for him. Regional Water Quality Control Board, and various other meetings over the years. It's almost redundant to hear it from him. But the insignificant eight that are talked about coming to these meetings and offering the same comments and really have no validity, I'm going to give you a little history on how ineffective the eight have been over the years. On February 24th, 2005, the bids on the Los Osos wastewater project came in 46% over engineer's estimate. On March 11th of 2005, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, concerned about the bid prices, wrote this to the Los Osos CSD. The Los Osos CSD must proceed with construction of the project if it is to avoid penalties under time schedule order number 00131, $10,000 per day for failure to comply with the project schedule. With that said, it has been and continues to be this regional board's desire to assist the Los Osos CSD in resolving its waste and water quality problems in the most effective, timely, and least costly manner feasible. Accordingly, we support your efforts to manage project expenses by pursuing more competitive construction bids. 2 weeks later, at the Wastewater Committee meeting in Los Osos, from the minutes, Bruce Buell referred to the comparison of bids distributed with the packet and passed out a more detailed comparison of bids with the engineer's estimate. Committee discussion followed on both handouts. Tom Salmon, Joe Sparks, Lindy Owen, Chuck Cribbs, Jerry Walsh, Gail McPherson, Al Barrow, Keith Swanson, Rachel Rosenthal, Chuck Cicina, Matt Clark, and Richard Margetson offered comments. Jim T. Catch moved to recommend that the board reject all bids. Gordon Taylor seconded the motion, which passed on a 4-2 vote, President Gustafson and Director LeGros dissenting. Jim T. Catch then moved to recommend that the board retain a pre-qualification requirement for contractors bidding on the wastewater bid schedule. Craig Baltimore seconded the motion, which passed unanimously. If they had listened to us back then, they wouldn't have started the project before the recall. We wouldn't be in bankruptcy, and we may be in a different
project. Mr. Brown.
May be built.
Followed by Ms. Owen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Supervisors. Mike Brown representing CoLab of San Luis Obispo County. 3 weeks ago, you had the item before you to adopt the panel for environmental review consultants. As you recall,
we pointed out that we thought that 5 years was quite a long time to have that panel sit without some sort of rebid. Now, of course, the main justification for the panel is to save 4 to 6 weeks of processing time when it is necessary to select a consultant to assist the county in examining or conducting some level of environmental assessment. Now, suddenly, we have an applicant who was progressing and is told that, even though we went through the process and picked a consultant, we've got to stop because somebody on the outside or in the press or wherever objected to that consultant, and now we're faced with some unknown or process. I heard they were going to rebid with three people or three firms. Someone else said it's a bigger process than that. Of course, the applicant's been delayed, and it's not really clear because it hasn't been aired out in this room what exactly was the management decision or policy decision, whatever it was, to stop the process. And we think that there should be a hearing on that, and this board should hear exactly what the rationale is for doing that. If there was a mistake, what was it? How did it happen? So forth. But we think there's an opportunity here. And that opportunity is to amend the process for selecting these consultants to provide a little more segregation of duties, which I think is a good practice in government, rather than have the Planning and Development Department kind of run the whole process. Have them with you develop the standards and the qualifications and so forth that you want for your contract environmental CEQA consultants, but then have the purchasing agent or some other autonomous official with the oversight of the county administrator actually conduct the process so that there is some segregation there. One of the things that always surprised me about county government in California is how much autonomy some of the departments have in the realm of purchasing and contracting. And if you look at the cities, if you look at a lot of the rest of the country, there are those segregation of duties. The purchasing agent, some other official who's an expert, should actually run that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Lindy Owen, followed by Ben DeFatta.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the Los Osos Sewer Terror Zone. About the public comment, there are a group of people that come from Los Osos. We've been coming for 4 years. Prior to that, we spent 7 years going to other meetings trying to get a green project for Los Osos. You wouldn't think that anything like that would be so difficult, but just as Mr. Brown spoke, when you get other outside influences coming in and winning over politicians, you begin to have a different project direction, and so people do keep active as long as they can. In Los Osos, we know that people have sewer exhaustion. There's just, you can only fight things for so long, and that's possibly what Mr. Gibson, Mr. Pavo are hoping, is that we will one day wake up and go, we just don't care anymore. Many people are leaving with that same opinion. I wanted to ask if Mr. Hill would have the courtesy of having some respect for the public that does come to do public comment to putting us back at 9 o'clock in the morning. This is very difficult to break up a day, and we spend our time, our money for fuel. I have to rearrange my schedule each week to try to hit when your public comment might land. So I would appreciate if you could make that a little easier on us that do come in and take the time to be active citizens in this democracy in this county. I wanted to talk basically, I don't think anybody, but maybe just a refresher course for what a STEP system is. You have a septic tank, and all your solids go in, and 70% of them are separated with no energy, no chemicals. It's all biology. And with a few good habits at home, you can run a septic tank for 30 years without having to pump. What people don't have an easy time with is a leach field. So what a step system does is it keeps your tank and it collects the liquid in a pressurized pipe that goes about 4 feet underground. It's directionally bored. It's very simple to install. It carries liquid instead of solid, so it's a whole different beast. It makes sense in a place like Los Osos that is already built. We have 42 miles of crummy streets, but they're installed. It's a little late to start ripping them out, trying to drop pipes 18 feet in the middle of them to carry raw sewage, which we already have the tanks. We have such an opportunity to do an innovative new system. They're being put in all over the country, and especially in places like Los Osos where you have the sand and you have earthquakes. Liquefaction will let those flexible pipes probably survive, and if anything spills, excuse me, it's already pre-treated effluent. I'd much rather have that leaking into my water supply than what comes out of these big gravity pipes. It's not too late to change. Thank you.
Mr. DeFatta, followed by Sophie Treeter.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, Board. Ben DeFatta here again. Is this county practicing truth, justice, in the American way? Doesn't look like it. The public has a right to know. We have heard Mr. Gibson many times that questions asked of him by the eight of us was answered by him many times. Did it ever occur to you five that we have a TV and radio audience of listeners that many have heard the question but never the answers from Gibson, Algren, or Weldell? So much for transparency by our District 2 supervisor who's supposed to represent Los Osos and be the judge and jury for his gravity, his flawed gravity project, conflict of interest for sure. We have no representation, really. With his ego, it is never going to change. We six or eight are asking the hard questions because many of these questions have never been asked by this board. After these three have spent over $8 million, we deserve to know what for. We have a right to complain. We want an accounting of what he is doing with all these funds you're giving him and his staff. This board should be asking these simple questions. Is that asking too much? Does this boy realize how several thousand people will not be able to afford Mr. Gibson and Algren's $200 million flawed gravity stinking collection system? Has this boy told him, get a cheaper wastewater project? I don't think so. How come your board has never asked Mr. Gibson how come his shovel-ready project has to be re-engineered again? How come you never asked Gibson, Algren, and Waddell why they wanted to build a treatment plant way out of our basin and told him it's wrong? The public has a right to know. How come this board never asked him, what, you want to spray this little community's only drinking water in the air never to be seen again? A level 3 water shortage aquifer that's being invaded with saltwater intrusion with all these delays? How come this board never asked these three what the Brodersen recharge system, disposal system site will not be able to dispose of 1 million gallons of water a day like you said it could? Now, where is all that water going to go? I hope it's not going to be dumped in the bay. By now, hasn't this board seen the pattern, these two, that they really don't know what they're doing? These two have been taken off this project a long time, should have been taken a long time ago and be fired to boot. The rumor mill is now saying that they are deliberately wasting time so that Los Osos runs out of water and purposely been stalling the sewer project these past 3 years so our only drinking water becomes contaminated with salt water. Because the Nacimiento Water Project cost is running in the red, Gibson and Algren want Los Osos to subscribe to that water project.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Ms. Treeter?
I'm done, sir.
Thank you. I'm Sophie Treeter. I represent Los Politas Resources. I want to thank the board for their time last week and for devoting even more time to this issue this week. It wasn't my intention to speak today, but I felt the need to respond to a couple of quick points. First, we're not interested in having an exemption from this process. We're interested in having a fair process and being treated the same as every other applicant. Unfortunately, what's happened with our application in the last 2 weeks is unprecedented. I heard one person here today mention that the bid process was flawed, but they don't give any specifics, and that's telling. The people who spoke before me said they are concerned about traffic, noise, and blasting, and yet we can't have an intelligent discussion about these impacts based on science and facts instead of speculation until we have an actual EIR. We can't have an actual EIR until we can start the EIR process and have a consultant on board. We did receive 200 comments on the EIR scoping, but they don't do us any good, again, if we can't start the EIR process, which feels at this point like it's never going to happen. First, the opposition criticizes the consultant that was selected, and then they criticize that the bid has gone out to too many consultants and too many firms. One person mentioned that this is not the proper forum for these comments, and I agree. All we were asking for last week was a proper hearing before the board on the contract that was awarded before being forced to go out for a rebid. I would say that it is the opposition that is trying to keep us from the proper public forum, and that's pretty much what last week's public comment was about. I won't take any more of your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that closes it to public comment. We'll bring it back to the board, and we will move into our hearings. But before that, I'd like to go to Mr. Jensen to see if he has any comment on A3, which we pulled and trailed from our consent agenda.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did retrieve the letter. It came in late Monday afternoon, was routed to another attorney in the office. We'd recommend, since there doesn't appear to be any urgency to this matter, that you just allow that matter to come back in a week or 2 weeks, and we'll have a report on this letter. I think it does deserve a response.
So we talk. Would you prefer a week or 2 weeks?
Because of the agenda preparation times, probably 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay. Mr. Grant nods. We know, so we will put that off until 2 weeks from today, that matter on A3. Okay. With that, Madam Clerk, could you please introduce the hearing item?
That would be item C1, a hearing to consider an appeal by Mr. Brandon Wood of the Templeton Area B Road Improvement Fee and a request to waive the appeal fee. First District, recommend denial of the appeal.
Okay. Mr. Marshall, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good morning, Supervisor Cherhill and Supervisors. I'm Glenn Marshall with your County Public Works Department. As the clerk had mentioned, we are on a C1, which is an appeal by Mr. Wood regarding a road improvement, Templeton Area B road improvement fee. The proposed project in front of you is a building permit for a second primary single-family dwelling, a little over 1,600 square feet, on an agriculturally zoned project. It's in the Templeton Area B road improvement fee area, and for a single-family home, the road improvement fee is about $10,455. Just a little brief showing of where we are in the county. We're just the project is located westerly of Templeton at the intersection of Oakdale and Las Tablas, and here's a close-up of the existing site plan, the existing site. There's an existing residence near Oakdale Avenue, and like I mentioned, the proposed project is a second primary residence. Well, the project itself is located almost in the heart of Area B. I know on similar projects, appeals to the board with the residentials, we've seen them at the borderline of the road improvement area. This one doesn't appear to be the case. The appellant listed basically two appeal points plus a request for deferral of this hearing fee. The first appeal point that he had brought up in his letter, which is attached as a attachment C in the staff report, was that the road fee is excessive. And just our response is the road fee is identified in the capital improvement project as the cost necessary to construct the capital improvements. And each year your board looks at those road fees and adjusts them accordingly based on the construction cost estimate. This is kind of a history of the road improvement fees for Area B residential since 2008. Back in 2008 through 2010, it held steady at $10,802. And back in 2010-11, it dropped down to $10,455, where it's at currently. The second appeal point is, he mentioned his family already lives on the property. They're not adding additional trips to strain the county roads. And in response to that, it's the trips aren't based on the historic use or the number of people living in the home. It's based on the home itself. So in the future, they may end up selling the property, and you know, the trip needs would vary based on the new owners of the property. One last thing to mention is the road improvement fees do stick with the property, so in the future they'll always have that credit for that one if things adjust. The last appellant, the appeal point was that he's requesting that this appeal fee of $725, I believe it is, $729, be either eliminated or reduced. So basically he's got twofold requests. One is to modify or reduce the road improvement fee, and the second is to modify the appeal fee. Response of the appeal fee is that it's charged to offset basically staff's time. A portion goes to Public Works for this presentation, and a portion goes to the clerk for their time. This is what you're used to seeing. This is straight out of our code, is the Section 13 of the County Code. Adjustment of waiver of the road fee may be granted based on the absence of any reasonable relationship or nexus between the traffic generating impacts of that new development and either the amount of the fee imposed or the type of road fees or improvements to be financed by the fee. In this case, I'll give you just a little brief Templeton history. Throughout the area, I'll look at residential, which is the top line of the table. Your board has heard 11 appeals since 1991. You've adjusted two, you've waived three, and you've denied six. The lower bottom right, the $411,515 is the amount of road improvement fees that have been lost from that area. Long list, but basically in 2009 your board updated the latest standard to the circulation study for Templeton. And for Area B, these seven projects were identified. They include Vineyard Interchange, debt service, which we need to pay off. The remaining seven are ongoing projects that will be used. If you look at the location of this project, if you remember back to the original site plan, the project would access 46 and enter towards Main Street if they were going towards 101, which is going to be predominantly the route, or they could take either Vineyard or Las Tablas to get to 101. So they'll be utilizing the roads that where this fee would be applied. Staff's recommendation is to deny the appeal, to reduce or waive the project's road improvement fee, and to deny the appeal, to waive the appeal fee. And I do have questions. I do have one correction to the staff report on page C1-4. First paragraph, second sentence, the end of the second sentence, it says the most recent fee adjustment was adopted by your board on December 7th, 2010. That was actually the hearing date, but it was continued to January 4th, 2011. So I'd like to replace that December 7th, 2010 with January 4th, 2011. And correspondingly at the end of the sentence, replace February 2011 with March 2011. And other than that, I'm open to any questions your board may have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Marshall.
Thank you.
I see no questions right now, so I will go to the appellant. Mr. Wood, if you would come to the lectern, you have 10 minutes to make your presentation.
First of all, I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to hear my concerns. And after sitting here during this meeting, I have a new respect for what it is you do and deal with sometimes. My name's Brandon Wood. I was born and raised in this county, as were my parents, John and Jackie. I have a good job with a company in the North County. I'm a single father with a 4-year-old daughter who I hope to be able to afford to raise in this county. I am currently living with my parents and my daughter on their property. My parents have allowed me to build a second dwelling on their property. The Department of Public Works didn't send me any information on this $10,455 road improvement fee until so far in the process that I had already secured my financing. And they want the entire amount to be paid up front, warn of possible increases in the fee if I delay paying, and discourage me from appealing by charging a $729 appeal fee. In this tight economy, I would think the county would want the permit process to be transparent and smooth. I feel it should have been made clear to me as a permit applicant when I applied for the permit, not 7 weeks later, that I am in a road impact fee area and the fee is over $10,000. My daughter and I already live on the property, so we are not adding any more traffic or impact to the area. I understand the road improvement fee remains with the property after sale. However, this is my heritage, and I can't foresee myself selling. It seems like I am being penalized for trying to create a life for my daughter and I in the North County. The Department of Public Works requests that the appeal fee not be reduced or eliminated on the grounds that it costs them time and money to prepare their response. Well, it cost me time, lots of hours researching and preparing to come before the board, and it also cost me money. I am losing 12 hours of pay to be here today, and both of my parents have also taken time off. To reiterate, the letter came 7 weeks after the process started, demanded the entire fee be paid up front or the permit would be withheld, warns of a price increase if not paid immediately, and punishes those wanting to appeal in the forms of delays and appeal fees. I have done everything conceivable to make this project affordable for me. I would really appreciate it if you consider my request to eliminate or at least reduce my road appeal fees and refund the appeal fee. I'm trying to stimulate the economy in a time when almost no one is building because money is very tight. I would hope the county would be supportive of people like me who are trying to build in these tough times and provide work to local contractors, suppliers, and county employees. If I build, I will pay taxes for many years to come, which will provide a lot more revenue to the county. I would also like to say that I would curious to see on those charts how many people ended up not building because of the road improvement fees. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wood.
I have a question, Mr. Wood, if you would, please. Mr. Wood, if you would. To date, what have you had to expend in permit fees and everything relative to the building that you paid to the county?
I've done grading stuff and stuff for the soils test. I think so far maybe about 10 grand into it, but I really haven't gotten that far in the process because this is holding it up.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wood. We'll let you come back for a rebuttal after we have staff response, if you'd like to. And let me go to Mr. Marshall and wondered if you would like to follow up on any of Mr. Wood's comments.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Hill. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The applicant, I think I'd mentioned he'd been in the process for 11 weeks. I have no indication that he was never not noticed beginning with the application that he receives from Building and Planning Department. It refers that there are public works road improvement fees in certain areas of the county. When we received the building permit initially, we sent out a letter. It's certified mail. Our letter went out February 16th. I'm not exactly positive when he received his when he initially applied for the building permit, but probably a couple of weeks prior to that. Mm-hmm. Notification was given I have no reason to believe that notification was not given. The road improvement fee, I'm sorry, the appeal fee is not meant to be punitive at all. Your board has the ability to adjust that. Historically, we look at about 2 or 3 years of data of what it actually costs staff to process this fee, and this is just what it is. I'm hoping the fee will go down next year, but it does adjust every year. And if you have any other questions, I might be able to answer them.
I think there's a couple. But could you put up the slide, Mr. Marshall, that talks about what it would take for there to be, I think, the one about Nexus. I think that's important to.
Should be on your screen right now.
Right, yeah, that's the one, the section of the code.
Shall I read it into the record again? Or?
Please, if you could.
Section 1301050 of the county code. An adjustment or waiver of the road fee may be granted based on the absence of any reasonable relationship or nexus between the traffic generating impacts of that new development and either the amount of the fee imposed or the type of road facilities or improvements to be financed by the fee.
Okay. I appreciate that. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marshall, you said that the planning department does list the fact that there may be or that there are public road impact fees. Do you know if they're specific about that? If Mr. Wood applied, would they specifically tell him that the area in which he's applying for a permit for does have a road impact fee, or is that just a general statement?
No, it's both listed on the application process procedures that the planning department hands out, and also it's my understanding, well, about 6 months ago, the planning department implemented a new tracking procedure that talks about projects, specifically by APN, if they're in a road improvement fee area, and their counter staff, as my understanding, has been trained to tell people that they may, you know, to look at that flag of the property to and identify, you know, let the people know, the applicants know, that if they are indeed in a road improvement area. It's similar to flood hazard or other geologic stability types of flags that the planning department holds. I believe that has been in place for at least 6 months, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite possible that he was notified at the counter, but I can't attest to that.
But it's Public Works in the case of road improvement fees that actually notifies the applicant and lets them know the amount?
Your board, years ago, at least five, maybe longer, directed staff to send out a registered mail every time we received a building permit from the planning department and identified that project as being in a road improvement fee area. We put down the fee. We say it's an estimated fee. We tell them the appeal process in that letter. In fact, I could put a copy of this particular one up on the screen if you're interested in viewing it. But basically, yes, every applicant, hopefully, gets a registered letter from the building, from the Public Works Department.
Okay. Now, recently this board allowed the deferral of payments from upfront to a process where they pay a deposit and then by completion have to have the final permit fee paid. Now, that's not being applied here?
Your board hasn't adopted that policy yet.
That's right. We directed staff to go back.
So exactly.
And policy in place. Okay.
And just if you'd like, I can give you an update to that as well.
I would appreciate that.
Certainly. We met with County Council last Friday. Planning and Building Department and the Public Works Department are jointly pursuing this. We put together basically a program which deals with a procedure, an application, and an agreement, which was part of the direction the staff got. That was we met with Council to have them review that document, both that procedure, the application, and the agreement. They are doing that presently. Once we receive word back from them that they're okay with it or any modifications, we will send that out to the Process Improvement Committee and to the Home Builders Association and internally circulate it to our superiors to make sure everybody's happy with it. Our goal is to make sure that application procedure is as simple as possible and that we do record an agreement with the county clerk that guarantees payment towards the end, and that was one of the items your board was appeared to be most stringent about making sure it happened.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My recollection is we did, on at least one project, actually go ahead and defer till time of final. Excuse me. So start that sentence again. I think it is important that if we do that, we have a proper proper agreement in place to guarantee payment. And I assume that in that previous instance, we did secure such an agreement.
We did not. We didn't have anything in place.
Okay.
That was Mr. Kingle's apartment complex down in Napomo.
Right. And so asking council, is there anything that precludes us if we choose to go this way of having the agreement constructed specifically for this project, if that were idea that we'd want to pursue?
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. Supervisor Gibson, I believe we could do it. I think the question is whether or not it's really worth it to all involved. We would have to develop an individual agreement for this particular project. They would have to provide us with a title report. The agreement would have to be recorded and would secure the payment of the fees upon occupancy. So you might want to inquire from, if the board desires to go that way, you might want to inquire from the applicant whether or not that's something that they wish to pursue. It's going to it'll take a lot of time, and I don't know whether it's worth it or not.
Okay. I would like to pursue that question, Mr. Chairman, at a point when we close close the public testimony part of this hearing.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you. And before we go back to the applicant's rebuttal, I don't know if that you understand exactly what we're talking about here in terms of deferral. If you do, okay, good. Then.
Okay. Let me open it up to the public. Seeing no requests from the public, I'll close it to the public and go back to the appellant, Mr. Wood, and you have 5 minutes if you would care to make a closing statement.
After I received this letter, I actually went on the website and tried to find what the cost of the road improvement fees were, and I could not figure it out. And I'm pretty literate with computers and websites in general. I applied for the permit at the end of December 2010. I was notified on the 16th or the 17th, which is still over 7 weeks after, about this fee. And just curious why the fee isn't revealed at the time of application. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Close it, bring it back to the board.
Mr. Marshall has it.
Oh, Mr. Marshall, did you want to?
No further comments. I don't. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bring it back to the board for deliberation and a motion. Mr. Meacham?
Yeah. Just briefly, on the first of all, I'm going to go to the response on the appeal fee. I mean, I know that it is a standard appeal fee amount, but it seems to me that it's a little excessive for four and a half pages of work. I don't know that that entire appeal fee should be applied here. The other is in recognition of the fact that they already live there. And so I do see a nexus in terms of not creating more impacts to the area based upon the fact that they live there already. So I don't know. I can actually see where we can make an adjustment there. But I'm going to let my colleagues weigh in at this point. And I would hope that if we cannot get to a reduction, that we can find some way to craft a deferral of some sort.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree with a number of comments that Mr. Wood made regarding the desire to stay on the property. You did see the code printed, and that's what we're working with. There has to be a direct nexus between, in order to reduce the fee on the amount of traffic that was used to determine what the fee is. And it does go with the property, so in the event the use changes, we still have two residents there instead of one, and it's based on the residents, not on how many people are living there. And so I don't know how, and Mr. Meacham would have to work on crafting a nexus to deal with that code requirement. I find it unfortunate that they didn't know in the beginning that this fee was going to apply, and that's just something that we're trying to clean up and make sure that it doesn't happen so applicants do know what the total cost would be. I would certainly be in favor, and I would support putting in place a mechanism that would allow the applicant to pay that fee over time, as we discussed recently. It's a policy that we do want to put in place. It's not in place yet, but perhaps if the applicant's willing to work with us on providing the necessary information we would need to enter an agreement like that, I would be supportive of doing that.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me pick up on the appeal fee. I agree. I think staff's analysis of this was pretty straightforward, and we set our fees based on an average. I think this is a much more straightforward than average appeal question. So just from ballpark, Mr. Meacham, I could see that maybe we split the appeal fee with the applicant on this matter, if that gets you somewhere near where you want to go. And speaking to the road improvement fee itself, I certainly feel sympathize and understand with the applicant and their family and the desire to keep family on the land. But again, I think as Supervisor Patterson referenced here, we don't have any control of what you choose to do down the road with that property. And at some point, Perhaps it's even your daughter who gets a driver's license and starts driving to town, and her friends start driving from town to come to see her. So we have to understand that that the increase of traffic increases with the increase in residential density, and it's sort of almost no matter who it is that's actually occupying. And going back to our requirements, going back to our code, in order to be able to grant that a waiver or reduction, we have to make specific findings. And I'm afraid I can't make those findings given the location of this property and its proximity to Templeton. I would be interested in your response to the idea of deferring the road impact fee for payment at the time of finaling, before finaling the project, rather than up front. And I think we could ask, or we would ask, I would be supportive of asking our staff to work with you on the necessary agreements. And again, if you had any questions about that right now, we could go through the steps, because it's not a checkbox thing. It's a little more complex than that.
We'll wait until. Mr. Teixeira?
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I agree with the comments of my colleagues on this project. I think that the applicant fee for the hearing is too severe, and I would also look at the road impact fees and come up with some kind of agreement with the applicant to defer them or stretch them out. I, too, have gone through this process, and I find it very onerous, and at the time that we went through, it was very intensive, that every 2 weeks we get a notification about something else or another fee that was due. And yes, this was 15 or so years ago, but the process has gotten better, but it's not perfect. And as Supervisor Patterson says, we are working on it, and it needs to be made better.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Marshall, could you once again put up the basis for adjustment or the basis for adjustment or waiver, the code?
I can. I'll appreciate it right now.
Oh, there we go. I'm basically sentimentally, of course, I think that we'd all like to do what we could when applicants come and want to do things like build a house for themselves and their family and find the fees to be difficult. But I think it's a bad precedent to do that. First of all, I think that our decisions aren't really about sentiments. Otherwise, we would find quite a lot of people in our county who are struggling financially or find it difficult to pay for certain fees. I'm more concerned with how far behind we get on the money we have for necessary infrastructure when we can, if we adjust and waive. So even without this part of it, I still find myself really, and not to sound hard about it, but not persuaded that adjusting or waiving is really in the best interest of the community of Templeton. And I think that's more important than a specific house in a property in Templeton, because that's what the fees go for, to finance necessary improvements for the community of Templeton. Mm-hmm. So I have to weigh that over Mr. Wood's interests, first of all. And secondly, I just can't quite frankly see a nexus that I think the nexus is there basically for the fee. I could not, as Mr. Gibson has pointed out, make the findings. While it is true, Mr. Gibson sort of pointed out, another residence does mean more traffic because it means more visitors. That, those are the sorts of things that happen no matter what. The more residents you have, the more people will come to visit it regardless. So I, other than looking for a way to defer it that's not overly intensive, or to, I don't know if we have the option even to find installments to pay the entire fee. I know, I just find myself not able to make the findings to adjust or waive. As for the appeal fee, I could join my colleagues in that sense, but I also know that it is an average, and the reason for the appeal fees, basically, potential appellants are made aware of that right away. It's not to penalize or to prevent them from appealing. It's to let them know that, it's a cost of doing business, and this is a business item. So I don't know if Mr. McNulty has any thoughts about what it would take to defer, or even if we had the ability to have it paid through installments, or is this an action-intensive way to go about it?
Mr. Chair, if we were to defer the fee here, it would not be something that we do routinely. So mm-hmm. we would first have to craft an agreement to allow the deferral of the fee. That would be recorded against the property.
Right.
It would be supported by a preliminary title report describing who has current mortgages on the property. They would have to sign off on the agreement as well. And the idea would be that once there's final occupancy allowed of the unit, that at that point the fee would have to be paid before occupancy would be okay.
Okay.
I think we could do it. It will take some work on Mr. Marshall's part and on our office's part. On the applicant's part, it will require an updated title report, and they'll also have to work with any current mortgage holders. So.
Okay. Mr. Meacham?
Thank you. Well, I guess if you just as you watch things, you can count the votes. You know where things are going to go here. So I can see my colleagues are not going to be supportive of making any kind of adjustment, although I do see a reasonable relationship between the traffic generated and what exists currently. Even though it's another residence, the same amount of traffic is going to be crafted by visitors that they have currently. So I see a nexus there. What I'm going to do, I'm going to make a motion, and we'll see where this goes, but I'm going to move that we allow staff to work with the applicants to craft a deferral agreement, and then I'm going to ask to waive the appeal fee.
I'll second that motion.
Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Teixeira. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Can I just ask for a clarification?
Yes.
Is the motion otherwise to deny the...
It's to deny the appeals to work with staff and also to eliminate the entire appeal fee.
Thank you.
And one question, would that, the question of deferral be an option? The applicant hasn't really spoken to the extra work of going to deferral versus finding some way to pay it up front. And I
guess that's what, given staff the opportunity to work with them to find out if they were interested
in
doing that.
I make that question and at the same time, regretfully won't support the motion.
Chair Hill, if I may.
Yes, please.
To work with the applicant in coming up with this agreement, like I said, we have an agreement that's being reviewed by council, albeit they just received it last Friday. Somewhere on the neighborhood of 3 weeks, they may want to take that into consideration. I don't know what the appellant's time schedule is
right.
to get his project and his permit pulled to start construction.
So we would have something in 3 weeks that might be able to work for this.
Potentially, but I'd have to bypass the, you know, sending this out. I'm hoping to get an agreement that's going to be work for everybody for both building planning and public works on this fee deferral. I think it may take at a minimum 3 weeks before we can even distribute it for review.
Yes, the applicant.
So you may want to see if the applicant's
I'm just curious as to where you are in the process in terms of the discussion.
If you could come to the microphone, Mr. Podium. Wood.
And if a would 3 weeks allow you, I guess, the time?
Well, if I decide to continue, I probably can find a way to pay it all up front. I'll just might run out of money at the end to finish my kitchen or something, but it sounds like it's a lot of trouble for you guys to go through the process of waiving this for another time. So I can come up with the money if I have to now and hopefully still have enough to finish in the end, but I would appreciate removing the appeal fee.
Okay. Well, then with that, I'm gonna redo my motion.
Okay.
I will
withdraw and redo.
I will make a recommendation that we deny the appeal, and but I'm also going to request that we waive the appeal fee.
Okay. Do I have a second?
The reason I'm suggesting waiving the appeal fee, we have 4 pages. This is pretty simplistic. I cannot see $729 on an appeal fee for this.
Well, again, I think it's explained as an average of appeal fees. Some are far more expensive, and appellants know this is the fee that it's required to have a hearing before the board.
Doesn't mean I have to like it.
Well,
yeah. Let's call the question.
Is there a second? Motion dies for a lack of second. New motion, Mr. Meacham?
I'm not going to make another motion. I've tried.
Okay.
I move that we reduce the appeal fee by 50%.
And I'll second that if that goes along with denying the appeal.
Yeah, that's right. We withdrew the entire motion and deny the appeal to waive or reduce the project road improvement fees.
Okay, so deny the appeal and reducing the appeal fee by half. Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Gibson. If no further comments, roll call, Madam Clerk, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
No.
Mr. Teixeira.
No.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, we move to our closed session. Open it up to the public. Have no requests from the public. So I would close it to the public and go to Mr. Jensen for a time estimate.
Approximately 30 minutes.
Okay, 30 minutes. We'll go in, and we'll be back at 1:30. Thank you.
1:30 or right after closed session?
I guess we can come back right after closed session. 30 minutes then. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Clerk.